So, for this evening's entertainment, I'm going to do a talk on increasing the quality of one's life. And you may have to forgive me to a small degree because I'm not on the internet very much, but I went over the source material in fine detail, so we'll see if I know more about this subject than you guys do. So why would you? I mean, why would you want to increase the quality of your life, like in the first place? For what reason? And so naturally, you know, it's pretty obvious to all of you who are working at least part time or full time for a living, and you've got, you know, many duties and responsibilities. You've got a household, you've got partners, children, and you know, all those things. Running a car and even running a business and all this type of thing. So, you know, you're actually giving a lot of time, energy and effort to sustain the lifestyle that you have. And so, you know, from my perspective, that you people deserve a good quality lifestyle when you look at the what you're actually, the effort that you're putting into the lifestyle that you're currently maintaining. Because the thing is, I mean, you know, if you weren't particularly happy, fulfilled, say satisfied with worldly life, I mean, why would you even bother being out there? You know, if you're not interested in living in the world, you might be better off sort of joining the monastery. But being a community and being a monastic is not everyone's cup of tea, because you know, all of you are well aware of the ups and downs that you experience in worldly life, in general society. And, you know, the community life is not necessarily a breeze either. So, you know, you have your joys and sorrows and your difficulties and, you know, all the stuff that we go through as a human being with your mind experience, you know, the full range of different emotions and reactions and everything that you can possibly see within your makeup, you know, say like a million and one feelings and mental states that you can possibly have from one extreme to another. So, you know, what does it mean? What does it actually mean to have quality of lifestyle, quality of experience? As many of you are aware, that you know, there's many levels, many facets to your life. You know, you've got your partnership, you've got your children, you've got your work, your leisure time, your hobbies and interests, and things like, you know, your physical health, which is not to be underestimated, physical health, mental health, which are key points, because without those, you're really in trouble. And what else would there be? And you know, the main facets. Time, you know, even time, having enough time to do what you want to do. Some, you know, some people are working 14, 16 hours a day, and you know, they've only got time to eat, sleep, go to work, and there's not much time for anything else. Especially when you've got say heavy mortgages. But regardless of circumstances, that you can put into one's experience at least a small degree of effort, and the vast majority of people this is a concern to them, because you know, who wants to be busting their chops, you know, working for a living if you don't really have that much say underlying joy or happiness or satisfaction in one's life? You know, people work very, very hard these days, and they have to, you know, they make quite a number of sacrifices. So, you know, human beings are, in general society, are fully entitled to be happy in general society. And if, you know, you're not, well, you may have to make some adjustments. And, you know, because the vast majority of you have internet access, all the vast, you know, there's many, many, many resources from different authors and different speakers, you know, absolute phenomenal amount of material that you can look into and research and study and cross-reference, and you'll all, regardless of wherever you find yourself in life, your personal makeup, you will always find good quality advice, guidelines, and instruction on how to be more fulfilled and wouldn't say like productive and, you know, fulfilled as a human being. Because, you know, you've got a limited amount of time span on this planet. You know, the vast majority of us won't live past, say, you know, roughly 80, 90 years of age. And one of our monks is currently, I mean, he's only 74, I think 74, not even 75. So, you know, he's currently in hospital with two vessels blocked and in his heart and an aneurysm. And so he could potentially be having a cardiac procedure, which is not, I wouldn't necessarily consider to be fun at that age. But these are not small things, and when it comes to, even for example, things like dietary principles, which I go on and on and on with different people, because it's not to be underestimated, the quality of one's physical health, because once your physical body is compromised and is damaged and diseased, that you're not going to have the same level of energy, vitality, and the level of physical function. So, you know, I mean, my dad, my mum and dad are over 80. And my dad's very, you know, he went from standard diet. He had chest pain when he was about 40, early 40s. You know, just too much meat, too much fat, oily foods, and so you get chest pain, and because he had a very, very strong self-preservation instinct, he did a bit of research and corrected his diet. So, you know, he went to a much more sort of healthy alternative, but was still eating meat, and then he reached a point where he cut meat out completely, meat, fish, and, I mean, all sources, pork and bacon and all the rest, and he became, an amenable vegetarian, and then last, two years become a vegan. So, but the thing is, you know, he's doing very, very well. You know, he was playing tennis a couple of times a week. But even at 80, 82 years of age, you know, my father is physically stronger than I am, and you know he can. I can't bench press the weight that he's pushing, and you know I'm 54 and I'm in reasonable health, and you know people shouldn't underestimate even at that age. You know, you can still be physically really strong. You know, you can be playing tennis several times a week. You can be pushing weights, and you can go for long walks, all this kind of stuff. So even at that age, you know, you're nowhere near had it. You're nowhere near dead. You know, you can still perform. You're going to be slow, but even cerebral function. People, you know, if the diet is very, very clean, you know, very low in fat, meat, sweets and things like even salt, chili, irritants, this kind of thing, which irritate the internals of the body. You can still be mentally very, very sharp and alert. And you know, we've got monks who've had very, very clean diets over the years, and the brain and mind function is still more than satisfactory. And the monks that we have who basically have very, very rich diets, and they're not careful with what they eat. They slow down, and their faculties, their mental faculties, and their physical faculties actually deteriorate a lot faster. And because if you basically use your physical body as a rubbish dump, it's not going to. You know, you've got this flesh body. Now you can imagine. It's just sort of like outrageous to consider that this flesh and bone body and these flesh organs that we have, tissue organs, can actually digest things like T-bone steaks and fried bacon and sausages. You know, I mean, the body has a degree of tolerance, it has a degree of resistance and sustainability, but, you know, it's not only for a certain period of time, and when one's physical health starts to run down, then, if you don't see that, if you don't see that sort of within, you know, like in middle age, people think it's normal to have arthritis at, mid or late 50s. But I say late 50s, you know, it's normal to have arthritis. It's normal to have heart disease and things like stomach ulcers. It's absolute rubbish, you know. You get yourself on a very, very clean diet, minimum vegetarian or possibly vegan, which is very, quite fairly strict, but, You can do the study, you can do your homework, and you know, you can function quite well even as a vegan with you know, very good quality recipes. And even my father said that, you know, when he went from vegetarianism to vegan, he, you know, at 80, he could see such a difference with the strength and the endurance. So even though you're just living on plant foods, and you know, you're being quite, you know, you're fairly strict with what you're eating, that the level of physical health that you have, it can be quite, I mean, quite sort of outstanding. And you know, my father's, you know, if my father doesn't, you know, have an accident or whatnot, you know, he'll probably live to 90. I mean, no problem at all. But in addition to that, the level of the sharpness, the cerebral sharpness, sharpness of the faculties, awareness and memory, you know, you don't lose it so quickly as you move into old age. You know, people think it's normal. Oh, you know, when you hit 60, 70, you get a bit vague and you get a bit, you know, your memory starts to go and get a bit forgetful and this and that. But you know, I've known people late 70s, 80 years of age, on very, very clean diets, and you know, they don't get that same level of deterioration. When I was in the hospital system, you know, you're doing people's like client patients' histories. You know exactly the way they live, their lifestyle, this and that. And you know, you see the factors. I mean, I studied dietetics for 10 years, just in lay life, and but it was completely obvious to me. I'm not an expert in this area, but it's just, you've got to be absolutely blind not to see this, that your physical diet really affects your physical and mental function and performance, because once your body and your brain starts to run down, you're not going to be able to perform at an optimum level. And you know, even with 70, 80 years of age, you know, you really should have good faculties, unless you have things like car accidents, motorcycle accidents, and whatnot, extreme experiences which are harmful to one's health. That, yeah, you really should have good function even at 70, 75, and very likely, you know, you'll probably slow down, but at 80, but you know, people even at that age, with regular exercise, with light weight training, you know, they can still have a very, very good posture. They can sit well, and you know, you've got a degree of physical strength and endurance, because you know, in a sense, like, you know, your body and mind is like a temple, and it's the temple that you develop the path, and you know, develop your samadhi, your wisdom, you know, your precepts, and the whole, you know, the 37 factors of enlightenment. And you know, everyone, I mean, the vast majority of people here probably orientate towards the Buddhist faith. You know, you're going to have a few, at least a few Christians, Hindu people, maybe the odd, well, very, very rarely, maybe the odd Muslim person, but not that frequently. They have quite a strict format. But you know, that regardless of the path that you develop, you know, with good body and mind, with good faculties, that you've got greater potential to take your path to its say highest level. You know, all of a sudden you have a certain say range of lifespan. Maybe some might be shorter than others because of karma, and yeah, I mean, you know, you're going to get people who, because of karma, you know, they could potentially pass away in their 30s and 40s, and you know, there are things that you can do, but it's not foolproof. You know, with karma, you know, if one's karma, if the hammer is going to, say, fall, you know, if your time is up, it's up. You know, it doesn't. You know, you can. There's no way you can run and hide. You know, if karma is due, if you've got some heavy karma which is rolling upon you, and it's going to basically take a person out. They can be a young person. They can be 12. They can be 5, 6 years of age. They can be a young teenager, 13, 14. And you think to yourself that, you know, that young child is completely harmless and has never harmed anyone in their life. you know, but you know, I don't have any doubts whatsoever that, that karma's at play. These young people, these young children don't get unlucky, but you know, if you're fortunate enough to be born into a Buddhist fraternity, you know, your mind, the quality of your mind will be in a much better state. So so when we look at diverse from, say, good quality, say, dietetics, and we move to, say, hobbies and interests, and maybe some of you might be blessed with having a job that you love. You know, your job is just so fantastic, you know, they really don't even have to pay you to go there, you know. I can't imagine, but it is possible. The vast majority of us have areas of interest, have hobbies, and there's spheres of education and art and travel and, you know, all sorts of different things that every single one of us are interested in, and a very strong basis for this interest, because human beings are conditioned as entities. And if any of you guys are interested in anything whatsoever that you don't actually see quite obviously in your current life, you know, like my father has a very, very strong interest in Middle East politics, history, and say warfare. And myself, I've never even because my father was interested in this stuff. I naturally become inclined, and I have this natural interest in this particular area. So, you know, you can have spheres of interest that you just pick up from, say, like mum and dad, or you can have them from past lives. People who have, I've seen people with no artistic training at all have skills in drawing and artwork, which the average person would take like several years, and within 6 months, you know, this person is able to sell an oil painting, the first oil painting for $500, and the second oil painting for like $1,000. After, you know, and this is quite a smart person, an intelligent person, with absolutely no previous education whatsoever during the course of their life, and after 12 months. Of professional tuition at TAFE under good quality teachers, is selling oil painting for $1,000, and that, you know, that's not a small thing. So, you know, that person's got past karma propensity. They've got, you know, they've got like underlying say parami, underlying ability from the past, because where else is it going to come from? You know, people who have skills, who have abilities, if you don't see it in the current life, if it doesn't come from mum and dad, from one circle of family and friends, you can absolutely guarantee it comes from past life conditioning, because the human mind, it's a conditioned phenomena. It's a mind experience. And so all this stuff, you know, all the sensory stuff coming in through the five senses into the mind, it's going to shape the nature of the quality of your consciousness. So, you know, you're going to be drawn to different things, you're going to like different things, you're going to be adverse to or dislike certain things based on pleasant, agreeable feelings or feelings that you don't like whatsoever. You know, you may be drawn away from certain things that you experience in life. But it's a good principle to, regardless of what feelings you go through, to understand the full business to the best of your ability. So, you know, as you're well aware, you have your work time, the time that you have with one's partner and children, time that you're driving back and forth to work, and yeah, you could be a person who takes the train. I know one person who takes the train to work, and so you're looking at absolute minimum, say Wollongong to Sydney. I think that might be about close to, I'm only guessing, 1¾ or after 2 hours sometimes, at the most, and then that person spends their whole day, going around, working within the mental health fraternity, jumping on and off trains just all day, so you could be like 6 hours on a train every single day you go to work. You can still use that creative nature and a constructive nature. You can study. You can draw. You can sketch. You can research. There's all sorts of things you can do when you're sitting for hours on end on a train during the course of your day. And that if you do the things that you really love in life, that you really enjoy, and it's incredibly important to you. You've got to get a sense of joy and satisfaction and happiness and fulfillment from that. So even if you're you could even be a person with could be extreme case, like with a person with say like even mental or physical disabilities, but mum and dad or the nurses, the caregivers, they can find out exactly what that person loves to do, with their life or during the course, then with the time that they have. And there's nothing that makes a person more happy or motivates them emotionally and gives them a sense of joy and fulfillment is to do those things that you absolutely love and cherish and bring about a sense of satisfaction. So every single person in this world, no matter how simple a person you are, or how incredibly brilliant you are, or how absolutely stunning you are, or absolutely plain a person is, that you're going to have a potential with different skills and abilities. It's a matter of finding that thing, that skill set, and every single person on the, an exaggeration, but the vast majority of the human race is going to have a potential for, or even an outstanding potential for certain things, even if it takes them 5 years. I had a friend who had a personal friend who was a sculptor, and even at 80 years of age, he was sculpturing massive pieces of art in granite and soapstone and really, really fine pieces that can take, even up to, nothing less than 3 or 6 months, like 5, 6, I would say it's a minimum 4, 5, 6 hours a day, because it really is hard work. You're 80 years of age with special types of chisels and hammers and for an 80 year old woman who's quite petite, only maybe 5'8", 5'9", doing 6 foot, 6.5 foot pieces of work, that's not a small thing. And so every single one of us are good at something. So you find that particular thing, and then you develop your skills, you get into it, you get to understand it, you explore it. And it could be stuff like, even for guys, doing macrame. You could do macrame or sketching like wildlife or flowers or stuff like that, no matter how outrageous or wild it might be. I mean, these days people don't make a fuss, even if you're like a tough guy who works out at the gym, but you really love to sketch ferns and flowers, people are not going to laugh at you, they're going to, there'll probably quite a number of people who'll be quite sort of impressed. And especially if you're good in this particular sort of field. So, each individual is going to have a potential. It could be potentially outstanding in this skill. And as one moves, it's not just the current life. As you develop your faculties in this particular area, you know, it's a skill set that you're going to take into the future. You're going to have that skill set till the day, potentially the day you die, and you're going to carry it through into your next life. So, you know, when you see these brilliant children who can master like piano and very, very specialized musical instruments and musical art forms, and they start at maybe 4 years of age, and by at least five or six or a little bit older, they've mastered a particular instrument or a concerto. Very, very specialized, say, melodies and pieces of orchestra. And, you know, these kids are not born with that ability. They don't just get lucky. They've developed that ability, you know, in past lives. I mean, where else is it going to come from? You know, I had a really good, a long-term Dharma teacher, you know, like 35 years, a senior teacher, who basically argued the point. And, you know, I mean, I can argue a person down with this kind of stuff if I choose to. You know, I can rant, you know, if necessary. But this person only doesn't believe in personal karma or individual karma, only believed in current life conditioning, even as a long-term Buddhist teacher. And you can easily debate that from numerous angles without difficulty whatsoever. And I was just amazed that they actually said that. But the thing is, the person was a meditator as well, and that makes a difference, because it's going to affect your awareness, it's going to affect your intuition, and it's going to affect the things that you see. People who meditate every day have far more insight and see more deeply and more intuitively into their own experience and into the experience of other people than people who don't develop mindfulness-based training at all. You can do things like watch that dark space in the mind, or watch your thoughts, or focus on like a one-minute mantra, or things like it could be like awareness of colour, awareness of smells, like in gardens or around the office. It could be a very, very specific sphere of meditation which is important to you, which sharpens mindfulness training and awareness, which brings about a sharpening of the faculties and brings about a sharpening of awareness and allows you to see more deeply into things. You know, because the higher purpose of a human being is to develop intuitive insight, deep insight, which actually breaks you through to the enlightenment stages. Because what's the point? I'm not going to argue this point, because I don't know a lot about hardly anything about evolutionary biology, so I'm not going to propose anything that I actually haven't studied in detail. Otherwise, I could, you know, potentially get myself into a corner. But that's my train of thought. But say for example evolutionary biology. You know, you're looking at a conditioning process over time. Most biologists focus on the current life, but we're looking at the big picture. We're looking at absolutely everything, the whole, you know, past life, you know, thousands and thousands and thousands of lifetimes that the Buddha mentioned in the suttas. And, you know, for people who have, say, at least upachara samadhi, will have a potential to recall at least their last, they've got a potential to recall at least their last life, maybe even a little bit further. You need that level of focus, level of sharpness as a minimum to do that. So, but you know, that business, you know, getting back to hobbies and interests, you know, and this thing that, you know, like life, Achyam Brahm came out with that comment previously. He was talking with a female mechanical engineer who was doing one of the projects at Janagro years and years ago. And And he said something along the lines of, I've got to get this right. He said, you should work to live instead of living to work. So, you know, your life, I mean, you know, all you guys, you have to work to sustain a livelihood, to cover your mortgages, to run the car and send the kids through university and all those things that you're well aware of, you know, to sustain your lifestyle completely. But money is just a means to an end. You know, you're sustaining the lifestyle you have, but you know, money really doesn't cut the ice when it comes to personal happiness. So, you know, in one of these little positivity quotes that I come across, this person who was a bit of an expert in this field said that even people who won at least $several million, and within a very short space of time they can indulge themselves materially and personally and travel and do all the sorts of things that people do as millionaires, but within say 3 months or maybe a little bit longer, that peak experience, that just delight and that indulgence and that, you know, that level of sensuality and that enjoyment, it drops back to a baseline level between roughly about 3 months onwards, depending on the person who's quoting the research. Because within your human experience, it can be the most incredible sex, it can be the most incredible drugs, but you cannot sustain that peak experience. It can be very, very deep, deep, really, really profound, blissful meditation, but it's the same. It's the same principle. You can only sustain it for a certain period of time. So your body, you can get so much pleasure with your body, and then you can go to a much, much deeper level with your mind experience. But it's still the same parameter. There's only so much pleasure and so much bliss and so much joy that you can get out of this body and mind experience. But you know, the similar principle that I fully encourage people to really explore, you know, the things that you love to do, because you spend so much time, you know, you're working hard, you sacrifice, and you're having to do things you don't particularly like. You're having to work with people who may not be so amenable or pleasant, and you're having to forego gratification and waiting for one's paycheck before you can buy the next maybe widescreen television and whatnot. So you know, you deserve, you know, anyone who works in everyday life, they deserve a sense of happiness. They deserve to be, you know, to be fulfilled human beings on whatever level. It's only fair, you know, if you're going to be busting your chops for a living, you know, working from the time you leave school, maybe 20 up to 65 at least, what's that, 45 years, you know, you deserve a little bit of happiness on the way, and if you don't have any, much at all, well, you may have to basically get on the ball and do something about it. So if I digress now and I move to maybe to attitude, if I move into another little field here. We move into the field of attitude, positivity, optimism, and working with one's mind, with one's mental experience. So what are we going to do? You know, I mean, I don't mind telling you guys, but this morning I had a really, really foul mood, and it took me about half a day to get over it. So you know, all of us get whacked now and then with bad states, and God knows where exactly that one come from. So luckily most of it sort of evaporated before the talk, otherwise I wouldn't be much fun at all sitting here and annoying you guys. So this fear of positivity, optimism, positive thinking, I mean, what does it actually mean? It means if I can rob, you know, these particular people valued information and experience, professional speakers, motivators, that it's going to involve the way that you look at your life and you look at yourself. You can look at yourself at 1,001 ways. You can look at your life a million different ways. This is not necessarily foolproof, but it's a matter of skills, developing skills and attitudes which are beneficial, which bring about a sense of positive feeling, optimism, accomplishment. Because you know, my attitude is that it's always best to focus on that which is, you know, which is positive and fruitful than that which is negative and defeating. Because you know, every single one of you know that focusing on goodness, positivity, on things like morality, energy, things which are interesting, good quality conversation, all these things bring about a sense of quality of life and quality of experience. Because you know, as all of you are well aware, I mean, who wants to hang out or spend time with self-defeating, negative, pessimistic, unhappy people who've got nothing good to say about anything or anyone? You know, the vast majority of people don't want to hang out with guys and gals like that. So what are we going to do? You know, I can talk the talk, but what are we going to do in everyday life when we're at work and we're in a situation where our job might be okay, but it's not fantastic. The people that we work with are okay, but they're not particularly fantastic. So what am I going to do if I put myself in your shoes? I mean, what kind of approach am I going to use? So I would consider things like, well, you know, this job has value has value to me, to my life, to my children, could be married with children, this and that. It has value as to sustain my life, to sustain my health, to help, you know, foster relationships within family, friends and whatnot, you know, because it's all material, money based, you know, house, shelter, food, security, you know, being, you know, just having a proper house and enough food, you know, like having enough food on the table, just enough to sustain you, to survive. It's these basic principles. So, you know, you go to work, you know, and you think to yourself, well, what am I going to do to increase the quality of my life, my relationships with other people? So I could be, you know, I could be a little bit more, just a little bit more friendly. You know, you don't have to kill yourself. You know, you can be a bit more friendly and helpful. And, you know, you can see just like even things like having maybe a kind word, or if you see someone's in trouble or they're really unhappy or they could be unwell and this and that. And you just support them in small ways, you know. Every single one of you, you've got a limited range with your physical and emotional and financial resources. So, you know, we can't all be like sort of Mahatma Gandhi or you know, Mother Teresa and sort of run around on a daily basis assisting and supporting other human beings in our life. Because some people, they can only handle their own stuff. They can't deal with other people's. And if you want to see the measure of a person, you want to see what a person is made of, get them to deal with other problems continually, you know, continue on a daily basis. And people who can do that, you know, like I take my hat off to people like psychologists, social workers, even GPs, regular people with regular jobs. You know, they've had to do degrees or medical degrees or specialists, or you know, it could be PhDs essentially say master or develop the skills that they need. But I don't underestimate the skill set and the personality capability of these people. People think, oh yeah, I've gone to, you know, I'm seeing a particular psychologist or a social worker or a therapist, and you know, you can source these people without difficulty. You know, there are dozens and dozens of professionals in this category. But within my own mind state, I really take my hat off to these people, and I have a sense of appreciation of what these people can do and how they can support others, because the vast majority of the population basically can't hack or can't do the kind of work that they do. And these people are a bit special. They are people who have real kindness and compassion and patience and tolerance, and they know the boundaries. They know how to work with people who are acting out, who are playing games, who are being manipulative, who are really psychotic. We had one. I know one person. This is just an example, and this guy was. You know, he was had like within his particular area of sport, you know, had nerves of steel. The vast majority, 90% of the population could, you know, like I won't go into fine detail, but 90% of population could not do what he was able to do. But this guy had to deal with a person who had moderate mental health issues, and not even severe, not even completely psychotic, screaming mad, and this person couldn't take it, and they took off from the location where they were. So it was a real paradoxical. You can get people with mixes of qualities. Where they have skills and abilities, but they can't handle certain situations. So, not to say that all of you have to or all of you are expected to. You know, all of us have strengths and weaknesses in different areas, but it's a good principle to increase the strengths that you have and to understand the weaknesses, and try to, if possibly, sort of polish oneself up. Say for example, if I didn't have a lot of patience, I'd get like really annoyed with people who would rob my precious time or were a little bit too demanding. I've got a very, very nice gentleman who rings me from India, I mean, every day, and I promised the guy that I would spend, once he was on the line, I would spend at least 5 minutes, because in the monastery we only work 4 mornings a week, which is not much at all. And if the young monks are working, I mean, I have to work, so I'm not going to be sitting around on the phone. If I get caught up with guests or whatnot, sometimes you're just not available. So, I spent about at least 30 minutes for 4 mornings, and it's too much, you know. So. I said, look, I can only talk with you for 5 minutes, this and that. And then he went for a couple of days, and you know, I had to do stuff. There was stuff coming up, but you know, the gentleman, he's a very nice gentleman. He's well educated. He must come from a rich family, because if he can ring me at any time in the morning or afternoon, he's not working for a living, and he's ringing from India, so he's got money behind him. And the impression I get is he's a very nice, well educated young man from a wealthy family, but unfortunately, you know, we run a working monastery, so none of us can sit around and sit on our bottoms and basically kill time. So, but you know, that gentleman, you know, I will have to give him five minutes every morning, and then just sort of shut it down. You know, who knows? He might even be watching the video right now. But so I really hope he understands. So we're going through our day, right? So what else am I going to do to make my persona a little bit more pleasant and supportive with the people I come in contact with? Like a nice little gesture that we had a young guy from Houston, who's a very, very, very nice young man. very gregarious. He's a big talker, really loud, and he's got to be about 6'4", 6'5", and he let me in on a little snippet. He was really tired of dating young ladies, you know, like under 6 foot. So he checked it on the web, and he met a very nice person who's very well educated and is much more wealthy than he is. And they've got a very nice apartment now, and I think she's about 6'3", and they're just doing great. They were dating for 6 years, got a nice apartment, and things are going fantastic. But what he does is when he's going through his daily life, he smiles at people. So you've got this giant of a man who is walking along the street, and he makes an effort to smile at people who are passing along. And just in a very relaxed, casual way. But you know, when he's in like large towns, he developed this as a skill. But when he goes to New York City, like he just can't do this. There's too many people. You've got thousands of people just coming at you. You know, like in the space of, oh God knows, 20 minutes. You know, you could count 1,000 people in any direction. So this has like a workable application. But he found it quite useful because as he developed that, he felt naturally more friendly towards other people, and he felt a greater sense of connection. Just very light stuff, very small stuff. And he actually felt more connected with his general community, because it's proven psychologically. If you get a pencil, for example, if it's a real struggle for you to smile in daily life, or yeah, even around your own house, you know, you find it difficult to even smile at mum and dad or smile at your boyfriend or girlfriend. Might be a bit of a struggle for you, but if you find it difficult to develop it as a skill, you can get like a pencil, and you put a pencil in your gob, and you keep it there for about 15-20 minutes. Like, professional researchers have proven that if you do that for a quarter of an hour, that your mood will change and you'll be so much happier. And multiple people have said this. So you've got to believe it, you know. You can go home tonight and you can try it out. In fact, I'll try it myself. So, you know, you've got little things like that, you know, which are a bit innocuous, but are proven scientifically, and you can test it for oneself. So what else, you know, what else? So, you know, what else can we do to develop a sense of connection with other people, improve the quality of our relationships with others, and to, you know, develop, you know, you don't have to force, like, you know, you may be interested in having more friends. And I knew a very nice young woman who's the friend, who was the former girlfriend, a good friend of a guy that I'm chummy with. And she's a lovely girl. She's a bit quiet, and she feels that she doesn't have any friends. And she's a bright girl, and she's interesting. If you get her into conversation, she is not to be underestimated. And her friend, her close male friend, were talking about, about finances and investments and bonds and all this type of thing within the financial fraternity. And he was a financial advisor for like at least 10 years, and she could hold her ground and hold her own effortlessly, and it was quite amazing. I was just sitting, we were having breakfast, and I was just listening, and she was basically giving him an education on investments and portfolios, and I couldn't believe it. You know, he'd been doing this for 10 years, and she was telling him stuff that he didn't even know. So she put him on the right track, and while we were there, he basically moved about, I think it was at least $750,000 in the space of several days. Like, I had a SIM card. Like, he had no phone at all, because he wants to maintain a reasonably peaceful lifestyle. So I had to have a SIM to keep in contact with people. So I just connected the phone to the computer, and he was just dialing up all the information. And He just moved $750,000 very, very quickly and very, very securely. And it was amazing the amount of stuff that she knew. I mean, my even with my father, like, he wouldn't make any substantial financial investments or maneuvers until he actually studied a company for probably absolute minimum 6 to 12 months. He would actually sit and wait. He'd sit and wait on his money. And if those guys were performing well if it was any doubts after 12 months, then he would basically lay down some very, very heavy cash. And my old man, my old dad, he never, ever, ever, for choice of wrong words, screwed up or made any major financial mistakes or really made, incredibly bad decisions. Not even once. I mean, he lost quite a bit of money with the financial crash, but he was so well informed. His personal investments basically just couldn't do any better. So, but this whole thing, I won't sidetrack too much, but this thing with human relationships and educating yourself and studying, as all of you know, I mean, I had to do a minimum, because I'm not on the internet very much at all. I haven't got that time to waste. But I had to study, over several hours to get this talk prepped, because every single one of us, you've got to have a knowledge base. You've got to educate yourself to a minimum degree, because if you don't, you're going to be I wouldn't call you a dull person, but like uninformed with limited knowledge and limited skills, and you're not going to be a particularly interesting person whatsoever. So, if you're interested in friends and you're interested in good quality conversation and to be interesting within oneself, to be interesting, in your relationships with other people, you've got to make an effort in this area, because if people, if you have a limited, you've all got internet access, so it's not really such it's not something that you're not, very, very well aware of. But a lot of people don't make the effort, and I've seen it over and over and over again. And I'm a very small teacher myself, but I deliberately make it a point. When I'm in conversation with people, I make it a point to be interesting from the inside out and to show an interest in other people, in what they're doing, and with the flow of the conversation, to talk about things that we both like and enjoy, and we actually get something out of it. If I'm, I got caught on the phone with a friend of mine, and I think he got the message, even though I didn't actually say something. He was having problems at work with the staff and this and that and the other, changes in the system at the nursing, very nice nursing facility where he works, and he just ranted for 2 hours solid about the dynamics. And I basically couldn't stand it after 2 hours. I had to shut it down. It was just going nowhere. And I wouldn't call him. I didn't call him for about at least 3 or 4 months. Because I didn't want to go through that again. I made the decision that within the first 5 minutes, if he brought that up, I was just going to shut him down straight away. And basically just tell him straight up, this is going nowhere. But amazingly, the next time I rang him, the conversation was very, very interesting, informative, and whatnot. So his direction, his mindset, he was in a much, much better space, and whatnot. So there was a lot of interesting things which come up, which we discussed, and multiple topics with different people, travel, experiences, the things he was going to do with his future, this and that. So every single one of you, if you want to be interesting as people, if you're interested in boyfriend, girlfriend relationships, you have to be, the ability to connect with other people, to sustain a conversation, not to be boring as a person. You have to make an effort to be interesting as a human being, because if you're not, you're not going to have many friends. and you're going to have trouble getting boyfriends and girlfriends and networking at work and all this other stuff. It's probably completely obvious to many of you, but it really cuts the ice, and it's an important part of your life. The personal contact and the communication that you have with other human beings. So let me think if I've left something uncovered. Just give me 30 seconds. Let me think. Yeah, something which came up, maybe a final point. It's a point within the Buddhist teaching, and it's called the Four Roads to Power, the Four Bases of Success. So regardless of whatever field that we're looking at, whatever area that we're looking at to improve the quality of one's life, the Four Roads to Power are present and should be there, maybe as guidelines to measure the success, your personal development in a sense. And so the first, with the Four Roads to Power, the first three are based on effort. The fourth one is based on wisdom, on insight. So regardless of what you are doing in your life on whatever level, you've got to have, this all very, very successful people. They are completely in line with these principles. The first one is intention. You've got to have an intention to change, to move, to be successful, to be more popular, to improve relationships with other people. Whatever field that you are looking at, you've got to have the intention to move in that direction. The first thought, the first substantial feeling or mind state. And the second principle is, you've got to exert mental and physical effort to sustain the goal, the quality, the direction that you're aiming in, that you're moving in. The third principle is full application of body and mind. So the second principle, you've started to, you've got energy rolling, you're moving, you're active, you're doing things, you're doing stuff to be successful, to achieve what you want. That third principle, which is full application of body and mind, full application of mental and physical and emotional energy or effort, everything you've got, as best as you can, close to 99, whatever it is, 99%. Most people can't give it 100% continually. It's just too much. And the fourth principle is wisdom or insight, which basically watches over those first three principles. So it keeps you on track and it keeps you moving in the right direction. So if you have a major, major goal that you are going, regardless of whatever happens, so you're putting forth mental and physical energy and effort. So if there's any obstacles, obstructions, if anything whatsoever blocks you, obstructs you, or slows your progress, that you find a way of circumventing, whether it's to go around or under or over. This is where your wisdom faculty comes into place. So you just don't put forth blind effort without circumspection. You actually think about what you're doing. To get good results, so you're putting in consistent effort, but am I actually getting somewhere? Am I actually achieving maybe the small to medium goals that I've set myself before I reach my ultimate goal? So as you're well aware, your insight practices, it watches over everything you do. Roughly in an extreme, parameter, every move you make professionally in business, personal relationships, networking, are you actually taking the steps that are necessary to achieve the ambitions, the things that you really want, the things which are really important to you in life. So I think I've gone almost an hour. So if I open the floor to any questions, challenging statements, any complaints, this lady just here in the red with her hand up. This lady.
Thank you, Venerable. It was a wonderful talk, very an enjoyable meditation. Just I'd like to verify the fact that if you put a pencil or a barrow in your mouth, I've got a friend who does that, who drives to the through the freeway to work every day, and it's very challenging. She does that, and she said it makes such a difference. Tonight, could you please talk about, well, you've talked about so many wonderful things, but a little bit more on gratitude, please. It's an attitude of gratitude. Thank you.
Okay. Maybe for 5 minutes if I can, if I'm allowed. Gratitude, thankfulness. So as a mind state that every single one of us, we have many. I mean, even the most homeless beggar on the streets of Perth has something to be grateful for. Even if he gets one meal, a solid meal a day with the Salvation Army, if he gets a bed for the night, or if he has clothes on his back. If he has a warm place to sleep, even if it's on cardboard in a warm corner behind a restaurant, every single one of us have something to be grateful for. And with the way we're conditioned in general society, that the materialism principle is very, very strong, and we're encouraged to get things and to get more and more and to get something better. And to get more and more stuff for our homes and this and that, but what about the stuff that we've got? What about the personal relationships we've got? What about the fantastic partner, children, and the nice car and the lovely home? It may not be a mansion, and it might be a small home, but it's a very, very, very nice home. You could have very, very good, very loving family and friends coming over, and it could be just a fantastic social situation. And so many of us don't reflect on the things that we have. We may take things for granted, and we don't look at the full course of our life. You could reflect right back. You can reflect right back 20, 30 years. I mean, even then, you've got things in your life which were of great value and importance to you. So, unfortunately, it's just the whole nature of social conditioning. It leads to satisfaction. The economic capitalist model is based on greed and acquisition and getting stuff, and essentially it breeds dissatisfaction. It breeds desire to get more and more and more stuff, to get better stuff. People have got so much stuff. There's so much that they can really reflect on in their lives, which has value, which they can appreciate. Even old friends from the past. You could have an old friend that you haven't seen for 20 years, but that you can still value the relationship, the time with that person. I did a funeral about 3 or 4 funerals back. The funeral director said to me, she had one of these very old push-button phones, and she told me herself, she said she just loves this old phone of hers. It's just so simple, and it reduces the complexity of her life, just texting, just phone calls and texting, and she thinks it's fantastic. It's like a $50 phone, and she's had it for like 5 years, and some people might think this is incredibly trivial, but she just absolutely loved this simple little phone that she had. So, there's all sorts of things. Just sit down for 5 minutes and think about all the good things that you've had in your life for the last 20, 30, 40 years. And I could guarantee you could probably write, a list of easily 20, 30, 50 things from the most trivial, absolutely, some people might think is trivial, to some of the most incredible experiences. Like, you could have gone to seen Could it be something like Machu Picchu in Central America, which some people, I've known people who've visited, and it was an absolutely incredible spiritual experience. So, you know, there's a full spectrum of things that you can consider that you can be grateful for. And because when you develop this attitude, the Buddha said that people who have a sense of appreciation in this world are quite rare. And as soon as you, as a human being, as soon as you get ungrateful and you become unappreciative of your world and your friends and your family, there's going to be difficulty and trouble come up for you, because you know, so it can be little things like one of the ladies came upstairs and she, you know, over years and years and years, she's done things for the sons and the daughters, son-in-laws and daughters, you know, for years on end, you know, 20, 30 years. And those guys, her birthday came up, and all they got her was a $50 Bunnings card, which is, you know, it's not much at all, considering that she gave them thousands, probably tens of thousands of dollars worth of cash and stuff since the time they were young. And she couldn't believe it. Her Thai friends, they got together on her birthday and they gave her something like at least several hundred dollars, call it $300. And those cheaps, you know, I don't want to be rude, but those cheapskates of sons and daughters could only scrape together a measly $50 Bunnings card. You know, it's pitiful, honestly. And if I try to pull a stunt like that with my mother and father, my father would just go completely berserk and would just go right off in my face. So, you know, everyone feels it. We're all sensitive people. If you lack appreciation, if you're selfish, you have no gratitude, I can absolutely guarantee you people will let you know, I mean, very, very quickly. Was there anything else? I'm sorry to cut you short, but I've got to be careful I don't go way over time. Was there any other questions? Any other? This gentleman, a gentleman here, right over the back in the blue and dark blue.
Yeah, I just wonder what your views are on. Luck in life. Luck. What do you think? Luck. Like, I believe that if you have a certain luck to start off, then you can be successful because it breeds, it focuses more and more if you find the right thing. And if you've got all the other things like energy and everything, you can get achievements from it. But if you can't find that thing, and it's very difficult, like you were talking about work before, I've had 30-odd different jobs. I've never been very happy in work my entire life since I left school at 16. And, it just doesn't seem to work for me, but... what's your view on luck? And then other people seem to find these things. I don't know.
Do
you think it's something to do with karma from previous life? Or
I mean, if I put myself in your shoes, I mean, you've had like vast, I mean, extensive life experience with different modes of work. But I mean, you know, I mean, did you ever I'm no careers advisor, but if a person sits down, writes down on paper, you know, what are the things I am really, really, really interested in? If every person, even the most blokey type of guy who likes to go to the pub and drink a couple of beers every day, you can absolutely guarantee there's something that he would be interested in. Every single one of us, because we're conditioned as people. And when you write down the list, all the things, it could be completely outrageous, it could be completely ridiculous, but that's not the point. You find that thing that you absolutely are fascinated. You could be completely absorbed. My father just loves to study. You know, he's especially history, military history, this kind of thing. And he's a bit of an expert. He probably studied it for about 50 years. But there's only one thing. He loves tennis. Absolutely loves tennis, and he studies and this and that. But yeah, that same thing. Make it very, very clear on the mind level. You know, get it down on paper. and explore it. Don't be afraid to, you know, even if you're 70 years of age, don't be afraid to go to tech or to go to uni or to do a correspondence course, because if you're still walking and talking, there's no reason why you shouldn't. You know, because you know, life's not, it's not about just getting up and going to work and coming home and catching up with friends and this and that. You know, if you really want some substance, you know, maybe something like a meaningful existence, you know, it's a good way to go. Because you know, I've met people when I was out, I won't go on too long, when I was out fruit picking and stuff like that, I met people whose main thing was like drinking, you know, like drinking heavily, and they're travelling around, which is not that boring, but their main thing was like drinking large quantities of alcohol and whatnot. But you know, I mean, there's a limited perspective on that. So, but the whole thing with hobbies, interests, education, it's constructive, it's useful, and for example, if I was 70 years of age and I didn't have a clue where I was at, you know, my life was a little bit empty, not much happening, this and that, I'd go see a careers advisor, you know, and if I can't work it out myself, see a professional person at a university or college and say, look, I'm interested in doing a course, but I really don't know what I'm interested in whatsoever, and get one of these people to guide you. They deal with these people all the time. That classic clip from Alan Watts, it was a beauty. If money was no object, you know, he would have people, I won't go on too long, but he would have people come to, his students come to him, finish their degrees, maybe even PhDs. They really didn't know what, they really weren't sure exactly which way to go. They did a professional degree, but they weren't really sure they wanted to go that way for the next 20, 30, 40 years. And his attitude was, well, if money was no object, if you didn't have to worry about money and working for a living, what would you really love to do for the rest of your life? This guy was a Zen teacher. He was a regular meditator, so he's much more sensitive and intuitive. And his answer was right. Was that? And that really, in a nutshell, that really hit the nail on the head. And many people could spontaneously come up with suggestions which way they would like to go if they weren't forced to work for a living.
Yeah, I did something like that careers advisor before. I went to these psychometric tests and they come up with an analysis of certain things, and then 10 years later what they said I thought was totally crazy, but they knew better than me because I actually did do this job for 6 or 7 years where I've been able to make some money and everything like that. It was bearable, you know. But so there are, you're right in that regard, there are careers advisors, and there's these psychometric tests they can do now to, that they can show you, they understand better what you're suited to than you think yourself. It was quite illuminating, but it took me years later to register it, you know. So there are ways, but yeah, just, you know.
Okie dokie, I think we should finish up. I'll pass it over. Let's see. If anyone needs to talk, they can come up, but we better wrap it up. And I'll just say, our respects to Buddha Dhamma Sangha. We got some stuff
online.
Okay. Debbie from the US, how to increase the quality of life for someone who's dying. So, if you're running, you're dying, and you're running out of time, I would use a similar principle. I would you know, come to a full understanding, I'll do a little bit of study, you know, reading and look at one's object, one's potential. I mean, if, for example, if you're going to die, I mean, where do you want to die? Do you want to die in a hospital? Do you want to die at home with friends? Or maybe you would like to die maybe in a it could be a specialist resort facility in nature. I mean, wouldn't it be nice to die in your bed, surrounded by flowers and shrubs and ferns and trees? You know, you could have, say for example in Asia where they have these covered pavilions, you know, wouldn't it be lovely to sort of die surrounded by natural conditions? So, you know, I mean, and the thing with like having a good quality death, you don't want to be drugged to the eyeballs and things like, you know, having good relationships with family and friends, because, you know, many people wouldn't necessarily want to die alone. You want to die with your loved ones and your friends. You don't want to die, say, like in a hospital amongst strangers. If you're physically and mentally able, you know, are there things that you can do? Are there creative things? So even if you're in your bed, you can't leave. You're dying and you can't leave your bed. Are there things that you can actually do? Are there arts and crafts? Are there particular interests that you can follow? Can you have your internet access? Can you study? Can you even do courses? You can be dying and you think to yourself, well, I've only got several weeks left, or maybe even 7 days, but I really would have loved to have done that particular subject or course. Well, just go for it. You know, who cares? You know, if you only got 7 days to live, you know, just do that course. You know, do that. Get into that area of study or research. You know, and because if the pressure's on, you're running out of time. It'd be a good idea to really get active and look at, you know, what's really important to you. You know, what's really important to you when you've got limited time on your hands. So, you know, all of you've got an awareness. You've all got an underlying awareness of this, but just that same thing, you know, just to use one's time as constructively as possible and to meditate every single day. People really need some mind power, some intuition, some develop their insight practice. You know, like when one of our monks went into hospital, he asked for his Kindle and a couple of new scientists. And one of the other monks is a full-on meditator, like minimum 8 hours a day plus. Said, "What is he doing? What is he doing? He's in hospital. He's coming up for a cardiac procedure. You know, what is he doing? Reading. You know, like." Looking at his Kindle and reading New Scientist when potentially, if things go wrong, he could be dead within 7 days, you know? So if possible, in a nutshell, just try to use your time as wisely, as constructive as possible, if you know for a fact that, you know, you've got a limited time span. I say, Constantine from Romania, what is the key to be positive when you're surrounded by negative people? So if you look at yourself, your mind experience, if I put myself in this person's shoes, I'm surrounded by negative people, but I want to be positive. So you might be in a situation, you're at work, you basically can't disconnect from these people, you can't get away from these people. So what you can do is maybe just, you know, when you're in conversation, this is the trap with some people. As soon as they start talking about bad stuff, as soon as they start talking about negative stuff, pessimistic, self-defeating conversation, attitudes and opinions, deliberately turn it around. It's got to do with attention. Draw their attention away from the bad stuff. And move towards, you know, good quality conversation, interesting topics, constructive, useful attitudes and beliefs, and could be anything, ideologies. You could be discussing politics with someone, and they really go sort of topo, and they start screaming about could be communism. Or it could be anything, you know, any particular political ideology that they dislike. Well, you know, there could be something, you know, quite good or even quite useful or whatnot that you can find in that particular system. So, if you're in conversation and you can steer the person away from a negative kind of perception or attitude, because, I mean, who wants to talk? You know, who wants to talk about negative things with someone else? You know, they're not doing you any favors. So that would be one particular point. And if you had a choice, avoid them. Don't connect with these people. It's your choice. You know, you can make the decision. You don't have to hang out with these guys. You don't have to have close friendship with these people. And you can, if you can, you can, you know, you can pick and choose your friends. You may have no choice as far as your work situation or business, but you know the, but you know, and you can increase. You fill your life with good quality people. You know, people who have, who are positive, energetic, who motivate you and who inspire you. You connect with people like that. So, you know, you balance it out. Even if you're forced to interact with people who are very negative, pessimistic, you deliberately fill your life with people who are positive and optimistic to bring your mind in a sense of balance, and you develop those underlying skills to increase the positivity. You know, you're looking at a mind experience. It's all coming from you, from your mind out through your five senses out into your world. So your mind is the forerunner of all states. So that's the power base, and that's where you are going to be coming from with your life experience. So Alan Brown from Scotland: as someone who suffers from depression and anxiety, I use meditation instead of medication. Do you think this is the best long-term solution? Well, it's definitely it's a strong factor, and it can be very, very useful. It helps you to balance, say, mental states, emotional energies. But for a person who suffers from depression and anxiety, I would definitely develop very, very strong loving kindness and compassion for oneself, and to increase the positive energy in the mind, and increasing that, like, positive self affirmations, self love, you know, and really after you do these very, very easy, very workable, say, loving kindness, compassion meditations, you know, after you've developed some samadhi, some focus of mind. You know, why am I depressed? You know, why am I suffering from anxiety? You know, to develop some insight and to really try to understand the reasons why you are afflicted with that particular experience. Because if you don't see into these things, they're not going to go away. You know, the meditation helps. It helps to increase awareness, sensitivity, intuition. But if you don't look into these things and you don't understand these things, they're not going to go away. They can be with you 5, 10 years plus. So everyone has a responsibility to develop insight and develop, you know, positive states of emotional meditation, which are very, very useful. So that's probably the two key principles that I can think of. And developing one's attitude, you know, deliberately and constructively trying to develop. Now, see the goodness in yourself. Look at oneself, and you know, everyone has positive qualities of mind. Everyone has at least a minimum degree of goodness inside them. There's all sorts of different points and aspects that you can develop to improve the quality of one's mind state. So we'll wrap it up there. And we'll finish up. Thank you kindly for your participation. So we'll bow to Buddha Dhamma Sangha and we'll finish up.